Xbox.
I was in a good mood already when I woke up this morning, but I have to say that I looked at my things to do list and I realized that Matt Tannenbaum was on our list of guests today. And I just always get a smile on my face when Matt comes in because he's such a great guy and a good friend, dear friend. And he comes in, he is the proprietor of the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. And he's come in now because he's a world traveler. We missed him a couple times.
Right. I missed two shows back in March and May, I think.
Yeah.
I was on twice in at the end of last year, at the beginning of this year.
We were trying to front load it because you were going to be gone for a long time.
But here I am.
Good. It's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you.
We missed
you.
Well, it's Matt Tannenbaum is of the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. They are on Housatonic Street in Lenox, and you can find them online at bookstoreinlenox.com, but you haven't lived until you just go there and watch Matt host. Okay.
But you need to get a parking space in Lenox. Good luck with this.
I've always had good luck, but I don't know. You know, if you're patient, you can find one, right?
Absolutely. Just drive around one more time and you'll get one.
You'll get one. So, all right. Where would you like to begin there, sir?
I want to begin with a book about music.
All right.
Because it's been a very musical summer at Tanglewood this year. I went to a concert, the Fellows concert, last night. They had a tribute to Ali Nussin, the British composer who died a couple of years ago, who became a good friend. He found this book, Where the Wild Things Are, by Maurice Sendak, at the bookstore in Lenox, and wrote an opera.
Oh.
you do. The kind of thing you do. Once you find a parking space, come in the store, you too.
Were you not familiar with this book prior?
I guess not.
Yeah. Well, it really flown under the radar prior to that.
So, Ollie was a big guy, and maybe he didn't look down.
Okay. All right. But he found it, and that's all that really
counts.
And
then he became good friends with Sendak, and it was a very happy story altogether. But so the book we want to start with today is Lost Words by Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris. You had James Burton, the Tanglewood Festival Chorus director, a few weeks ago.
Yes, who was talking about this major new work that he had premiered at Tanglewood.
At Tanglewood. I think it was at Tanglewood on Parade, which I didn't get to because I couldn't get out of town. There
couldn't
was
find
too
a place
much.
To park.
I couldn't park. Right. So this book is a spell book. McFarlane, who's a nature writer from Scotland, writes a spell book. It turns out some years ago that grown-up editors of the Oxford Junior Dictionary decided it was time to put some new words in the dictionary that kids needed to learn, like blog and broadband, and I think they're listed on the back, and email. And, well, they needed to take some words out. They didn't have room for all the words. So they took out words like acorn, dandelion, otter. And one sharp-eyed observer realized that they put in all these new words from virtual reality, and they took out all these old words from nature.
And these are things you mentioned dandelion and acorn, but I mean these are not obscure weird words. These are things that you would just assume would be in a
dictionary
for children.
And of course, what happens if you take a word out of the dictionary, if the word no longer exists, the word doesn't get used, and then someone comes along and says, well, we're going to clear the field of the heather. You know, what's heather? You never knew what it was.
Heather?
So this is one of these, you don't think that nature is going to be a political struggle. But is this an evolutionary thing where we're all going to be just talking virtual reality words and no more nature?
Well, see, interestingly, in England, they're doing away with the words, and here in the country, they're actually doing away with the species. So that's
right. That's Boris and Donald, hand in hand through the heather, or what was the heather?
So that's the story of the book, and then it's beautifully, beautifully illustrated.
It's a big hardcover book, but not bulky. You can it's a great book for anyone to hold in their hand, a child and a grown up, and each word has three sections.
As an altar boy, I've read book. I have had books like this in my hand most of my life.
I missed that one.
Yeah.
So each word, like Joe's open to the word, the page of the newt, has a 2 pages preceding it have all the letters of the alphabet and the words, the letters that spell out the next animal or the next word are highlighted. So you get a sense of what it's going to be. And then you have this poem that McFarlane has written. And then the next page is a 2-page illustration by this lovely artist, Jackie Morris. Why don't you read one of them?
Yes, I'll read Newt. So the N, Newt, oh Newt, you are too cute. Emoted the coot to the too cute Newt. With your frilly back and your shiny suit and your spotted skin so unhirsute. Too cute, roared the newt to the unastute coot. With all this careless talk of cute, you bring me into disrepute, for newts aren't cute. We're kings of the pond, lions of the duckweed, dragons of the water, albeit it's true, he paused, my newt. How great is that?
That's a really good one to do on the air. That's great.
So James Burton hears that and says, boom, that's something I can work
with.
Right,
right. So he writes the music and he premieres it with the Tanglewood, with the children's chorus last month.
How terrific. The book is gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And we don't usually give prices, but it's
a $35 book.
I mean, it's not
well
it,
worth it.
Really, well, beautifully done. All right.
Published by House of Anansi in Canada.
That rolls trippingly off the tongue, doesn't it? Okay. What else you got there?
Ask Again, Yes, Mary Beth Keene's new novel. Mary Beth Keene read at the bookstore in Lenox some years ago. She read back in 2013 when her first book, Fever, came out. Fever was about Typhoid Mary. And her buddy from Fellowship, Brendan Matthews, they went to UVA together.
Oh, Brendan Matthews.
Brendan Matthews, who's our local guy, has a blurb on the back of this. And he brought Mary Beth and told me about this one, gave me the advance word on this one. And this book's been flying off the shelves. And apparently, I just found out a week or so ago, Mary Beth is on the Jimmy Fallon, what show is that?
The Tonight Show.
The Tonight Show.
Fallon.
This coming Thursday. And I didn't realize, because I don't watch a lot of television, that these late night shows are having more writers on. Just like the old days when you wanted to write a novel just to be on the Johnny Carson show.
Yeah. Well, I know Seth Meyers has done a great bit for authors, and I'm thrilled. This would be really cool. It's a novel about two neighboring families in a suburban town, the bond between their children, a tragedy that reverberates over 4 decades, and the daily intimacies of marriage and the power of forgiveness.
Mary Beth is a writer who can get into the details of, let's say it's 1970s New York City. It's the story of two cops and their families, and then they move to the suburbs. And what happens, there's a tragedy that happens that it connects the two families. It reminds me of a great book that I read many, many years ago called The Eighth Day by Thornton Wilder. You ever read that book?
Yes.
It's a story of two families in southern Illinois at the turn of the last century and the tragedy between them and what happens to the children. But Mary Beth has a way of getting into these the heads of the characters, so that you know you read a passage and you know that this passage came from her own, not her own experience, but as she follows her own character, as she creates this character, and the character then in turn creates her or himself, this character then would say exactly that. Mary Beth is that kind of a writer.
It is Ask Again, Yes, a novel by Mary Beth Keene, author of Fever. It is published by Scribner. All right.
Another novel, because I always liked novels.
I know you do.
This is the strangest novel I've read in a long time. I love this book.
Thank you for sharing.
It's Little Boy by Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Lawrence Ferlinghetti just turned 100 this year. We know who Lawrence Ferlinghetti is. He's a poet and the proprietor of the City Lights bookstore and a publisher of Pocket Poets series that brought the beat movement.
I was going to say, he's the beat poet.
He's the guy. Well, he says, I was never a beat poet.
But a promoter. A promoter.
Of the beats,
yes.
Right.
An advocate, yes.
And he loved them. And so this book, do I have a page?
Yes, you do.
I do, marked up right there.
There you go.
And so this is, he starts off with a narrative. He was a lost boy. He was born, his father died a few months before he was born. His mother shipped him off to relatives, and he spent his whole childhood basically lost. And little boy, he says, little boy, grown up after an endless series of, here's Kerouac's influence, an endless series of confusions, transplantations, transformations, investigations, fornications, confessions, prognostications, hallucinations, consternations, circumnavigations, realizations, radicalizations, and liberations as grown boy came into his own voice and let loose his word hoard pent up within him. So he just goes on a rant and is telling the story of his life as a stream of consciousness. But what I so loved about this book is the literary connections, the literary references that he makes. And I know I have another page here that I want to, page 63. Come here, page 63. And it is, no, it's page 53. Come on.
We're about to get better than that. Yeah. Be careful what you read there, man.
So I'm a broken record or a human tape loop, returning and returning with the same yearning to be one with the mother. So sit still and receive her full in the face or in your tummy, back straight in the full lotus position. Ha ha, as if I'd ever waste my time like a leisure class kid sitting all day facing a wall, trying not to think. And who has the time or money to do that? And so he wants to talk about his life and just goes off on these literary references. I just love this book so much.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Little Boy, a novel. All right.
What's the next one?
I have Martin...
Martin Buber.
Buber?
This is a far cry from Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
Okay.
And yet... So we know Martin Buber because he wrote I, Thou in 1923. And we still have our copy that we bought in 1967 that has our name written on the front page and
this is the editorial. We is that what?
Yes.
I don't know what you're talking about, Matt. But all right, didn't know if I missed something in the library.
Martin Buber, a preeminent Jewish philosopher and thinker, came of age in the early part of the 20th century, and wrote the classic "I Thou," the relationship of mankind to the spiritual home. I read the first sentence of "I Thou" so many times. Someday I'll have to go to a class and learn what that first sentence. skimming the book, he goes down these pathways in your brain and takes you to these places where sometimes I can understand them, sometimes I can't understand them. But he knows what he's talking about.
But I like that idea of a life of faith and descent.
Absolutely.
That you have that faith, but you also have to leave the path every once in a while.
Right, right. So he came of age and in the early 20th century in Germany, watching what was happening to Jews in Germany, watching what was happening to Jews everywhere in the diaspora, and was a Zionist on some level, but at the same time saying, agreeing with Stefan Zweig, who wrote him a letter and said, you know, Zionism is going to be the end of the Jewish people because we want to live as a people in the world, not just become another nationalist state. So, and Buber was very popular in the post-war time in America, gave lectures at the age of 70 in the early 50s, came around to America and gave lectures to sold-out houses. So, and this is the, why I brought Martin Buber along today, is we've sold over a dozen copies of this book,
wow,
or close to two dozen copies of this book this summer to people who know who Martin Buber was. And this is part of the, published by Yale University Press, part of the Yale Jewish Lives series.
Yeah, it's a beautiful series. They do a really nice job on that. It's Martin Buber, A Life of Faith and Dissent. Then we move on to, I think it's probably my favorite author name of the week.
Mark Wigglesworth.
There you go. Mark Wigglesworth.
It's called The Silent Musician, subtitled Why Conducting Matters. Wigglesworth. Now, just to put in a plug for the publisher, because we like that Yale book, from the Buber book from Yale. This is published by the University of Chicago.
Oh, another great press.
Another great publisher.
Another great university press.
And this is the American edition. The British edition came out a year or so. He's British. He is the head of the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. He's won an Olivier Award, which is the equivalent of...
an Oscar, right?
Well, what's the music
Tony?
Award?
Tony? Grammy?
Grammy, right.
Okay.
Right. And...
an Emmy?
And Mommy, this is the first book... Like I say, I like fiction, mostly. But this is the first nonfiction book that I have wanted to underline a sentence from each of the first several paragraphs. And I kept thinking, is this too simple? Because it's so concise, it's so clear.
Now, you want to underline them because
I love them.
You love them and you want to explore them.
Yeah. I just want to sit with that sentence for a little bit. Here's the chapter headings. Actually, the beginning of it, the introduction, is called Shaping the Invisible.
Hold your thought. What time do I need to get out here, Mike? Okay. We got to get out in a second, but go ahead.
Okay. Can I tell you my conducting joke? Well, he tells a conducting joke. The joke.
No, we got time for the joke. Go ahead.
Okay. The conducting joke is a cartoon explaining what a conductor does. What you do as a conductor, you stand up, wave your arms around, and when the music stops, you turn around and take a bow.
There you go.
That's what a conductor does. So...
There's a lot more to it, though, in The Silent Musician,
Absolutely.
Why Conducting Matters. Matt Tannenbaum is our good friend. He is at the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. Please go and see him hold forth. It's at 11 Housatonic Street in Lenox, bookstoreinlenox.com. Matt, you're a delight. Thank you very much, my friend.
Robert Kuttner, Friday night at 5 o'clock.
Excellent.
The Stakes.
An event.
An event. Robert Kuttner, The Stakes, 2020 and the Future, the Survival of American Democracy.
That light subject. Find a parking space for that. The bookstore in Lenox, bookstoreinlenox.com. Matt, you're the best. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.